Good afternoon, Your Honors. My name is Nathaniel Deakins, registration number 38752, on behalf of Mr. King. Your Honor, subject to your questions, I'd like to start out by presenting what the issue is in this case, which is whether the search warrant authorized the police to conduct a strip search of Mr. King in the presence of as few as five, but as many as 11 officers, without articulable specific facts that Mr. King was secreting contraband, specifically cocaine, in his private areas. The judge below, ruling on the motion to suppress, found that the warrant, which was for the premises of the motel room, as well as persons found therein, authorized this strip search. And just to go, the facts, quickly summarize the facts, I think they're important here. The police had various police officers, so this is a investigation. It wasn't, you know, a very lengthy investigation here. Kind of conglomeration of a couple of officers' reports, two alleged sales out of the back of a motel room. And on that basis, they obtained a warrant and found out that Mr. King had rented the room 16, we'll call it, and they did not obtain a no-knock warrant. I'm not going to really get into that unless Your Honors would ask me questions about that, but they set off some sort of diversionary device, a flashbang device, and barged in with a battering ram and found Mr. King inside with another woman, Ms. Burr, and searched the room. Having found nothing, they did find a glass smoking pipe. Having found nothing, they asked Mr. King to come back into the room. And at this point, the stories diverge somewhat between what the officers say would happen and Mr. King. However, what's clear is the officers had Mr. King take off his clothes. And at this point is when we're alleging the constitutional violation occurred, because the search warrant did not authorize this level of search.
Oh, while you're stopped, go ahead, Judge.
Let me ask you, Mr. Deakins. When the officers are in the motel room, they're there, as I understand the record, as a result of a tip. And the tip tells them that the occupants of the motel room likely have been dealing drugs or using drugs. When they're in the motel room and they ask Mr. King to wait outside, and they find a pipe and baggies, suggesting to, I suppose, a reasonable person that there is perhaps some distribution going on or an intent to distribute, do they then have probable cause to ask Mr. King to look in his pockets to see if there are any interior pockets, since they've already patted him down, I assume? Does that rise to the level of probable cause to take a closer look at his clothing?
Well, Your Honor, first I think I'd like to perhaps correct what I think is a factual misunderstanding. But then, yes, I want to answer a question, which is, in rereading the briefs and the motions and everything in preparation for argument, I think that at the suppression hearing, and again, I could be corrected, but the only thing that they found, or that the evidence that they presented at the suppression hearing, was that they found a glass smoking pipe. So I think that and in my brief, I wrote that they found some copper scrubbers and something else, but that evidence was adduced at trial. And Ms. Robar might have different understanding, but I think that's the case. So that might change your question in a sense, if depending on what was presented at the suppression hearing, based on, you know, their level of suspicion based on what they found. But it doesn't change the standard, which is, I think the cases, especially Colorado cases that address strip searches and body cavity searches, suggest a standard that might be probable cause plus, if you want to call it that, or a clear indication. What I think is important is that the officers must have specific articulable facts that the person they're going to search is secreting those things in their, you know, private areas. And they did not have that in this case. Just because they didn't find anything doesn't mean that there's something underneath.
How does one go about obtaining a warrant other than on the person that gives within its scope the right to conduct a strip search? Do you simply make the allegation the person's a drug dealer? We've observed in the past that they might not wear underwear, and there has been a series of events to suggest to us that they'll secret the drugs in body cavities. Or I mean that's really where we're headed, it seems to me.
Right, and certainly the police shouldn't be faulted necessarily for seeking a warrant in the first instance, right? And the cases that I've read from other jurisdictions, I couldn't really find any Colorado cases that really get to the heart of the matter in this case. Cases from other jurisdictions seem to say that, based on that standard, that whatever you want to call it, probable cause plus or clear indication, that you look at the totality of the circumstances, just like many other Fourth Amendment standards, that to determine balancing the government's interest in the person's liberty interest, individual interest in privacy. So, for example, some things that other courts have looked at have been the level of investigation. Some courts have found that the police did present evidence, and they've used a term called cheeking, which is, you know,
what term? What you said, Counsel, they found, what term do they use for in a cheeking? Did you?
Yeah, specific evidence that people, or a specific person, not people, a specific person has secreted drugs in their, you know, private areas.
Can I ask you, Mr. Deakins, I want to make sure I'm understanding your argument. I think you've got a couple of pieces here. The first argument, I think, and please correct me if I'm misunderstanding, you say the warrant that talked about on the person, whatever, that was not sufficient to authorize the strip search or the body, any body cavity search if one occurred, correct? Okay. And when you're talking about the stand, you're now talking about, if I'm understanding you, assuming that the warrant didn't cover this. The question then is, was there enough under such and such standard to do a strip search? Correct? Am I with you?
Yes.
All right. And so when you're talking about the standard, it's at that point that you're saying it might be clear indication or something greater.
Yeah, I don't mean to be ambiguous about it. I think that...
You are, and I was just trying to understand.
Yes,
I'm making sure I'm understanding.
Yes.
Okay, and I wasn't faulting you at all. I'm making sure we're tracking. All right, so... And again, the last thing, I think you said it, there are cases out there where somebody does, a police officer will go get a warrant, so we have reason to believe the person hid drugs in a private area. That's what you're suggesting when you use cheeking. There's cases on that.
Yes.
All right, well, let me ask you then, I just wanted to make sure I was tracking with you. It seemed to me, and I'm going to ask your friend across the aisle here, that the argument presented, at least the prosecution's, the people's argument, is that the search complied with the warrant, and in any event, it was consensual. So, and you say the court rejected consent. And so if I know you get limited time and may want to save time for rebuttal. I would be interested to hear you address the consent piece. The court seemed to me to have made no finding whatsoever on this issue of consent. I'm curious why you think we could say the court necessarily rejected it. And I guess my question to you is, if we agree with everything you said so far about the standard and the warrant, why don't we have to remand at least for a consideration of whether there was consent?
Well, I think the...
Well, for further fact findings.
Right. And I think that's one possibility, is a remand for further findings. However, I think that the circumstances of the suppression hearing, at which the DA presented the testimony of the police officers who argued that Mr. King consented to the search. Then the DA argued that theory to the judge. The judge sat on it for a couple of weeks and issued a written ruling. And then the DA requested clarification at the next hearing. He said, wait a minute, Judge, you didn't address this. What was it, because of the warrant that the search was okay, or was it consent? And the judge said, I find that the search was valid under the warrant. And
so then the court didn't have to address the issue of consent.
That's an inference. However, it also seems to make sense, or even more so, that the judge would address the consent issue first, and then without having to reach the constitutional issue of the search warrant. So the court did not explicitly say, I reject consent. And I think that I have to concede that. However, all the circumstances suggest that the court passed on the issue and rejected it.
Thank you.
So, and I don't think that the evidence, what the police must show to a judge to get a search warrant that says a search of a person, including a strip search, is much different than what they would have to show just under that they did it at the scene necessarily, although certainly warrants are preferred. But I don't think that the police or the district attorney presented that evidence at the hearing below. So there were no articulable facts presented to show that Mr. King was secreting drugs, other than that they didn't find anything in the room and that they didn't want to go home empty-handed. So I do have a few minutes left. I suppose I'll reserve that for a rebuttal.
Mr. Deakins, you've got about 8 seconds left. Thank you. Ms. Rohrbaugh? Ms. Rohrbaugh, I don't mean to get you off track, but what's on my mind, how could this warrant possibly support a strip search when it says plainly on the person? And further, why wouldn't the trial court here make some findings that would indicate an articulable basis to conduct a strip search? The trial court did nothing.
Your Honor, I would like to respond to those questions. Perhaps I could first introduce myself.
Oh, I'm sorry.
Many of you know me, but I'm Elizabeth Borobos, and I represent the people of the state of Colorado.
I apologize. You have every right to introduce yourself, and I didn't mean to shortchange you on that.
No worries. The touchstone of Fourth Amendment is reasonableness. That's how we judge the Fourth Amendment. We don't have bright line rules. We thought we once did in Belton, but that turned out not to be the case. I think this is a very interesting Fourth Amendment issue. I think that there are procedural concerns which would cause this court not to reach this interesting Fourth Amendment issue in this appeal. In answer to your questions, Judge Graham, I think certainly one of the procedural problems in the case is the court made no findings whatsoever. And since we decide Fourth Amendment on the basis of was the individual intrusion reasonable, we don't have any findings with regard to what was the scope of the intrusion here. So we're just speculating when we're saying whether or not it's reasonable.
Well, what's the standard of review on the scope of the warrant? The court did say, as Mr. Deakin said, I find this was appropriate under the warrant, that the warrant covered it. Isn't that a matter of de novo review for us?
Yes, Your Honor, all legal conclusions are subject to de novo review, whereas factual considerations are made by the trial court, they're not made by the appellate court, and are entitled to deference supported by the record. I think the problem here is that the defense made no actual effort to ask the trial court to make a ruling on the scope of the search that was conducted. So we're left with these very, very different sets of facts to choose among. And I would like to point out, as a procedural matter in the case, I don't agree with the way Mr. Deakins has presented the oral and written rulings, just that I think it's clear that on the morning of December 27th, 2007, the parties were in court for about 10 minutes in the morning, and the court said that it intended to issue a written order, and that it would probably do so that afternoon. But it was going to apprise the parties of what would be in the written order. It then said that it was going to conclude that, in fact, the mistake on the face of the warrant did not render the warrant invalid. And it was also going to conclude that the no-knock entry was justified under exigent circumstances. It was at that point that the prosecutor asked whether the court was going to address the issue of consent or whether the court felt that the search was authorized by the warrant. The court then said that it was authorized by the warrant. The prosecutor did not, it's true, at that point ask the court to make further findings or conclusions, nor did the defense. Now, at that point in time, it appears clear from this record that neither side had examined the trial court's order. And in fact, the order apparently issued that same day, the 27th, that's what it's file stamped. And at that point, the court's order doesn't mention this conclusion that it's authorized, the search was authorized by the warrant. It merely discusses the two issues that the court said the court was going to consider that morning. And so we're left in another situation that would be another obvious point for the parties, particularly defense counsel, to ask the court for some sort of legal determination about whether the search conducted was reasonable and for fact-finding regarding whether the court found the testimony of the police officers or of the defendant more credible. But Ms. Rovell, did that.
Sorry, if I can ask a question on this point. And I'll just tell you, I'm highly troubled by your argument. You are saying basically, that, as I understand it, the defendant abandoned his argument about the scope of the search, and along the lines that he should have asked for findings, and you cite Ty Whiteman and other cases like that. In most cases, if I remember them, the court never ruled at all. I mean, the defense filed a motion, and you sit around for a year or more and didn't do anything. And the court said, that's abandonment. I can understand that. I have a much more trouble understanding how that applies here when the court ruled. Could you cite me any authority where the court ruled and the defendant was found to have abandoned an argument like this because the defendant didn't ask for further findings at that point?
Well, Your Honor, my position is that the Maps case is instructive, which was cited by both defense counsel in his brief, and I cited it in my brief. In the Maps case, the appellate court found that the defendant had not abandoned the issue because he had argued it at the suppression hearing. And I think that's different. I have been involved in other suppression cases where the courts have found that there was an issue raised in the motion but not argued, and that because it was not argued at the suppression hearing, that it was subsequently abandoned. Now, my position was, although the Maps court found that the issue was properly before it on appeal because it had been argued at the hearing, that case was an issue which involved whether information in a search warrant was stale. And that's something that does not require factual findings. It looks solely to the four corners of the warrant. So factual findings by a trial court are not necessary. And this absolutely is fact specific. So the reason I'm saying that I think it's been abandoned or waived is because the court really didn't rule on the scope of the search. The court said generally that a search of the defendant's person was authorized by the search warrant. And I think there's no dispute that that's true. The search warrant authorized the search of persons found on the premises. What the court's ruling absolutely failed to do was decide whether the search involved was reasonable. And so my arguments on a procedural basis are that, first of all, this has been abandoned or waived because I think that the particular legal issue involved, even if presented to the court, was not ruled upon by the court and thus is not properly before this court on appeal. I also think that this court can't really raise, reach the issue of whether this was reasonable, even if you think it was preserved and not abandoned, because we don't have factual findings. I don't know how this court can decide it without remanding it for the findings.
And that, I was going to ask you, doesn't that counsel for a remand, not an affirmance?
Well, I think that if this court decides that it's not abandoned or waived, that that would counsel for a remand. However, I am prepared to make an argument that under the facts and circumstances here, that we have a search that is authorized by the warrant.
And I want to hear, I do want to hear your argument, Ms. Robo, if I can interrupt you one more time. I think you argued two pieces here, and I want you to correct me if I misunderstood. First, that this is authorized by the warrant, and second, that it was consensual. Are those the arguments you're presenting to us now? Besides the abandonment.
I'm not actually making an argument that it's consensual today, because the trial court made no ruling on that. I think that if this court decides it must remand for consideration of whether the scope of the search was permissible, then necessarily the court should also make factual findings and legal conclusions with regard to consent.
Thank you. I apologize for interrupting you.
Okay, so I want to begin by just reference to the Supreme Court case on the issue of Bell versus Wolfish. And in that case, they said the test of reasonableness under the Fourth Amendment is not capable of precise definition or mechanical application. In each case, it requires a balancing of the need for the particular search against the invasion of the personal rights that the search entails. So that's why this case is so difficult, because we don't know exactly what the search was that was conducted, because we have the wildly varying accounts of what happened. And thus, it's difficult to say if what occurred is reasonable. I think the most interesting case on point is the South Carolina case that was discussed by defense counsel, which in the brief, which was Washington versus Whitaker. That is a civil rights action brought in the South Carolina Supreme Court. But it is among the cases that have been cited, a case that actually deals with a search under a search warrant. And the case, the court found in that case that this was an unreasonable search. It was four or five judges to one. I want to look first at what the dissenting judge said. First of all, the dissenting judge said, when a search warrant is sought for illegal contraband drugs, the officer never knows in advance whether a strip search will or will not be desirable. The reasonableness of a strip search must be determined in light of observations on the premises. Strip searches are not illegal per se, and the Belk versus Wolfish case tells us that body cavity searches, even without any particularized suspicion in a custodial setting, are not per se unreasonable. Now, in that case, the Washington versus Whitaker case, as this one, the search authorized a search of persons on the premises. And the dissenting judge noted there was no differentiation in the warrant between a search of clothing and strip searching. It authorized a search of persons.
But the majority rejected that. You're citing us a dissenting opinion from South Carolina?
Yes, Your Honor. I want to move on next to the majority opinion, but okay. I wanted to remark on some of the cogent comments, I believe, by the dissenting judge, namely that strip searches are not per se unreasonable, and also that in general, a search warrant says something like a search of persons, and it's really whether the search undertaken under the circumstances, both in the warrant and on the ground when they execute the warrant, are reasonable. What I want to say about the majority opinion in that case, and I do absolutely want to address the majority opinion here, is on page 899 of the majority opinion, where the majority gives six reasons why the search there was unreasonable. And I think those go to support a conclusion that the search in the present case is reasonable. Now, in that case, the officers got a warrant for drug trafficking out of a particular premise at 37H Flood Street by an individual named Dean, a male. So the first two facts that the court cited in saying that this was an unreasonable strip search of the women found on the premises were, first of all, that immediately upon their arrival, the officers were told that Dean, who was the individual whose drug activity was described by the warrant, lived next door. Then second, the court said, although only a male individual named Dean was suspected of selling drugs, The officers searched only the women present. Now, if we look at the present case, the defendant is absolutely the guy who is described by the search warrant. It is he, Omar King, of a particular date of birth, who is described as selling narcotics, specifically crack cocaine, out of this hotel room. It is he who is present when the search is conducted, and it is he who is subject to search. There was another individual, a woman, who was also found in the room. There's no indication that she was searched. Only he was searched. Third and fourth, the Washington versus Whitaker majority stated that no pat-down search was performed in that case prior to the strip search, and that the strip search was ordered even though no narcotics or evidence thereof was discovered in the search of the premises. Now, in the present case, there was a pat-down, a less intrusive search, which was first conducted. And also, they did find evidence related to narcotics. They obviously found a smoking pipe for the crack cocaine. I don't recall if they found anything else, but they clearly found evidence relating to narcotics. So both of those facts, which the court found determinative in the fact that the search was unreasonable in Washington versus Whitaker, go to show that the search in the present case is reasonable. Now, the last...
So, excuse me for interrupting you, Ms. Robert, and I'm with you on that. So, in your case, your view, any time a warrant says you can search on a person, if you found a glass pipe, and that's it, no drugs, you can do a strip search with nothing more, and it's identified this person's dealing drugs.
Yeah, I have two responses to that. First is that I don't agree with the defense that this was necessarily a strip search. What the officers testified to was they wanted to examine the defendant's trousers for hidden pockets. The fact that they saw the defendant's buttocks happened to be because he was not wearing underwear, but their testimony was very, very clear that they intended to search his trousers. So I don't think that the point of the search was looking at his private parts, and therefore I'm not sure it's fair to say necessarily that this is a strip search. I also think, and I quoted some wonderful language in my brief from the Supreme Court, an old case that said if you're looking for a still or an automobile, that's one thing. But if you're looking for a very small object, in that case it was a couple of canceled checks, or if you're looking for rocks of crack cocaine, you're limited by the area of where those items might be hidden. And in this case, where they are seeking a crack cocaine dealer, it's certainly reasonable to believe that he'd have his stash hidden where he had it hidden. I see I'm now out of time, although I'd love to go on at length. I thank this court for its time and attention, and I'd ask you to affirm the conviction.
Thank you, Ms. Rohrbaugh. Mr. Deakins?
Just a couple of follow-up points, Your Honors. I understand the analogy to those cases where you can look for something in anywhere where it's capable of holding it. Of course, we're talking about something a little bit different here. We're not just talking about a wallet or a backpack or something like that. We're talking about a person's private areas, for to speak of it generally. I would also say that I understand Ms. Robar's argument about what the officers testified to was their purpose in having Mr. King take off his clothes. And, whether that's credible or not, I don't know personally, but under the statute that defines a strip search, that is still a strip search when you have someone take off their clothes. So that's why in my brief, I so fervently argued that it was necessarily a strip search. I think if Your Honors look at the statute, perhaps you could compare. I also point out that Bell v. Wolfish, which of course is a big United States Supreme Court case addressing strip searches and body cavity searches, and there are a line of cases from the United States Supreme Court that address strip searches and body cavity searches at the border and also in prisons in a custodial setting, and clearly in those cases the court holds that prisoners as well as people at the border have a diminished expectation of privacy. What we have here, Mr. King, although there was a warrant to search his room and people found therein, he has no such diminished expectation of privacy. And so we're not talking about people in custodial setting. I think you will find cases in Colorado that address custodial settings and strip searches. However, maybe not something quite on point in this case. I would also ask Your Honors to look at the warrant. And one thing that courts in other jurisdictions have looked at is the extent of the investigation. You know, do they have to have Officer Jones say that, I know Mr. King, I know he's a cheeker, and again, I use that term just because it's appropriate here. Not necessarily, but do they have to have some articulable basis to do a strip search? Yes, otherwise, they could do a strip search in every single case where they don't find drugs, but they have some indication that there was some drug dealing in the past, and that is unreasonable. So,
Mr. Deakins, I have a little time. Would you respond? I would like to hear your response. Ms. Walber makes a very compelling and indeed, I think, eloquent argument about why Washington versus Whitaker doesn't apply, is distinguishable. I'd be interested in your response.
Well, I think that I cited a number of cases from other jurisdictions, and some of them for the standard, and also to give the court an idea that there's some cases with which to compare. I don't remember exactly the facts of Whitaker or the court's holding and the reasons why, but I would point to the supplemental authority that I submitted, which is People v. Mothersell, and I think that comes to an opposite conclusion. A similar conclusion, but explains the reasons why they found that was an improper strip search as well. So I think the cases can go, you know, either way. So
thanks for your candor.
Thank you, Your Honor. Yes, you
Well, thank you, Mr. Deakins, and thank you again, Ms. Lorbaugh. These arguments were superb, and we thank you for that. They were helpful to the court. The matter is deemed submitted, and you can expect a written opinion to issue in due course.